Hello, everybody, Mom's Zone, and this is Mom's Gotta Talk for Wednesday, 8th of March, 2023, or 2023, whatever way you like to say it. In today's episode, we've got plenty of things to talk about. Some new devices have kind of come out. Sonos has finally dropped its new spatial surround speakers. And we have a new Android phone to talk about, which apparently has one feature that iPhone 14 Pro has. You probably can guess what it is. And obviously some more details about upcoming products, more leaks and rumors. And as I said, towards the end, we'll also be talking about streaming boxes and what makes them imperfect. So stick around and let's get rolling, shall we? So in case you didn't listen to last episode, we obviously went for an hour long. We're going to try to obviously keep it brief at just half an hour-ish. Wish me luck. I'm obviously recording right now. I usually do it like one straight take. I don't do too many edits, to be honest. So yeah, let's just get rolling, shall we? Alrighty, it was all yellow. That's how it feels like. Apple has dropped a new color for the iPhone 14 and 14 Pro series. A stunning sort of sunflower yellow, a kind of light sunflower yellow color for the iPhone 14 and 14 Plus. It's going to be available this Friday, pretty much, for pre-orders, and it'll be shipping to customers next Tuesday, March 14th. So that's probably the thing to talk about. And as always, it's more or less the same iPhone 14 and 14 Plus with the processor and features and all the features that have come in the 14. And this is basically a mid-year upgrade in terms of color. You're going to basically get a nice fresh color for spring, because Apple obviously tends to release a one color refresh probably towards spring. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And again, starts the usual $799, $899 in the US for all colors, kind of, including yellow. So yeah, quite a lot of sunshine on the back. Alrighty, moving on from new colors to a new era in wireless audio. Had to slide that in. Sonos has shown off two new wireless speakers. Now, if you remember very well, probably over a week or two back, I talked about it on a previous episode, that Sonos has new speakers coming because we had a leak from The Verge of promotional pictures of these speakers, and there were some features that were showing off, but we didn't know much detail until now. And now Sonos obviously has shown off two brand new speakers, replacing two of their sort of iconic speakers that everyone is known for, that everyone knows in the world of Sonos, the Era 100 and Era 300. The 100 is kind of the successor to the Sonos One, their main sort of stereo speaker for regular music playback. Very popular, quite affordable to an extent for what you get. It is a wireless speaker, so you connect it to your Wi-Fi, and obviously you send whatever you're listening to those speakers or Wi-Fi, no Bluetooth required. The Era 300, on the flip side, is kind of replacing the Sonos 5. And although, to be fair, Sonos themselves have said that they're not discontinuing these products not discontinuing support for the Sonos 1 and 5, any software support generally or features. They will be supported with after sales, and also that's nothing to worry. If you have those speakers, there's nothing to worry about. But the Era 100, on the other hand, and the 300. We'll first talk about the Era 100. That obviously replaces the Sonos One in the lineup, in that it features, according to the press release here, it's a stereo speaker, left and right, so it can now do full stereo. So it's not a left or right channel type of speaker. It's basically a single stereo speaker. Again, good as it is on its own, or as a stereo pair, giving incredible detail, or just as a speaker itself, giving you a little more detail and quality. Two angled tweeters send crisp high frequencies left and right for rich stereo experience. That's according to the press release. While the larger mid-roofer creates stunning bass that's unexpected from a single compact speaker. That's pretty impressive in a way. And as I said, comes with that Sonos ecosystem capability, in that you can combine them with one of Sonos's three soundbars for surround sound, or just get two of them for stereo audio that obviously sounds much better than those Bluetooth speakers. And speaking of Bluetooth, the new interesting thing about these Sonos speakers, the Era lineup, the 100 and the 300, is they come with either Wi-Fi or Bluetooth support and/or Bluetooth. According to Sonos's CEO, they kept hearing from customers that, and also both that A, the times have changed, and obviously there's improved standards and codecs, and that means you can send higher quality audio. But more than everything, customers have kind of apparently been asking Sonos like crazy to offer Bluetooth support because it's quite practical, and there's some people out there who want to directly send audio to their Sonos speakers without needing an adapter or some sort of attachment where they can send their audio. I think before these Era speakers, if you really wanted to push through your Sonos speakers like Bluetooth capability, you would have to get one of their hubs, generally, which has a input, an audio input, so you can connect a Bluetooth adapter. It's extra steps, extra unnecessary steps, but now these new speakers have Bluetooth support, which is a pretty big deal, again, because Sonos speakers are not do not offer previously Bluetooth support. Apparently, it was unnecessary and was not that good compared to the Wi-Fi capability that is there on these speakers. But now you have those options, so that's pretty cool in a way. Both speakers come with USB-C output input and output, pretty much for power and data. And also, you can get an adapter so you can plug in through. You can wire them through either an Ethernet, and again have auxiliary output input. Sorry. Into these speakers, so that's pretty cool. And apparently, the auxiliary input is because a lot of people are using their speaker, using turntables and vinyl with their Sonos because they want to utilize their vinyl through those wonderful speakers. So they added that support. So that's pretty cool, in a way. So that's the software features, kind of, and the upgrades on the inside. Along with that, if you know Sonos, they have this feature called TruePlay where you can sort of tweak and tune your speakers according to the environment or surrounding of your room or living room or space. And that was only available for iOS users, but now with the Era 100 and 300 speakers, because they have microphone arrays and that can be used for measurement and sort of optimizing audio. Now, if you have an Android phone or an iPhone, you can run the TruePlay setup on those speakers. So that's pretty awesome, nonetheless, in a way. And yeah, the speaker's design itself, the Era 100, it's like circular. It's slightly circular, in a way. Sort of kind of a cylinder, let's just say. It's different from the Sonos one. The Sonos one was like a bit of a cubical device, but now the Era 100 is a bit of a cubic shape, and the Era 300, on the other hand, has this kind of hourglass design. It's quite apparently for a lot of audiophiles and audio lovers. Or lovers of speakers in general, it's been quite there's no word to describe this really. It's been quite subjective, let's just say that. But everyone's taste is different, and that's pretty interesting in a way. So I've talked about the 100, and that's basically a regular stereo speaker, kind of the successor to the Sonos one. And now let's talk about the Era 300, which is I think what most people have been looking forward to. And this one's the really exciting speaker that you want to definitely check out if you have the money and you enjoy your audio in a way, but you're not an audiophile, but you just love the speaker and like how incredible it, how much power it can pump out. The Era 300 is a, as I said, it's a boombox speaker, kind of like the Sonos 5, their boombox speaker in a way, with best-in-class drivers with high-res audio capability. So you have six powerful drivers, so they direct sound left, right, upward, and forward to you and sort of in front of you, so that's pretty interesting in a way. It's not in 360 direction, it's again right in front of you because apparently a performance happens in front of you. This Verge did a pretty cool video where they also interviewed the design the designer and the CEO behind behind the Sonos speakers. I'll link them in the show notes so you can watch it after this or during. So you have this again, as I said, it's pretty cool in a way. If you're into speakers, to say the least. So this speaker comes with Dolby Atmos support, as I've said earlier, and that and basically Dolby Atmos for music. So if you have Apple Music or Amazon Music, and they offer if there's any tracks mastered in Atmos, you can play it back through these speakers wonderfully. And again, like for like, realistically, a full-blown mix. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And yeah. Also, it can do Dolby Atmos for movies and TV. This, again, would require you to have a Sonos Arc or Beam, and you sort of connect two of these Era 300 speakers. So to give you that spatial audio experience, so that's pretty interesting. You could obviously take the slightly affordable soundbar that Sonos offers. I don't remember the name of it. The one that is like now $400 or $500. And you can use these Era 300s as like an upgraded rear speaker with spatial. It's pretty impressive if you ask me. And again, I think the really best selling point of Sonos is the ease of use and this one-click capability. And again, they're quite well built for a lot of people. So that's pretty interesting in a way. You can kind of clearly tell that I'm not into this kind of stuff. So if I'm kind of skipping a lot of details, pardon me, beg your pardon. So that's pretty interesting. But yeah, both speakers have a different interface. They have a switch, so you can switch. They have a switch for the microphone, so you can switch that off if you're quite privacy conscious. They have this kind of capacitative. They've got this kind of not raised, but what's the capacitative slider? It's like quite. It's quite contoured, so you sort of slide it over to adjust the volume. These are small touches, but they go a long way, especially when you have an easy-to-use wireless audio system like Sonos. Every little bit matters, and yeah, both speakers are made with recycled plastic and packaged in sustainably sourced paper, like you see in different packaging for different products, and apparently only consume under 2 watts at idle. So that's pretty interesting in a way. You're wondering about the price now. One warning I will give you surely is these are going to be some pricey speakers. So if you're quite a thrifty person and you're just going to thrift on audio, you might not want to look at this, but the Sonos Era 100 is going to cost $250 starting, and the Era 300 will cost $450. Again, quite a substantial amount of money for some top-notch speakers. The Era 300 especially is quite pricey. But then again, you're kind of paying for the wireless connectivity, pretty much, for the options you can get. AirPlay is supported on this. You can, especially on the Era 300, you get AirPlay on it. You get the Atmos support for home theater and music playback. Amazon and Apple, through their services, you can stream music in Atmos, which is pretty interesting. You can't say it for other speakers. You're basically paying for that integration, for that one-click capability, and also well-designed product and well-tuned audio. I've not used a Sonos speaker, so I cannot speak from experience the quality of the sound, but it'll probably be right up there with, but for me, really, it might not really be up there with the high-end speakers, but for me, the thing is, it's basically the design and the software capability. That's why you buy a Sonos speaker. At this point, if you really, really care about your audio, you really have a proper setup from start to finish. And have the right kind of amps and adapters to sort of get your audio through to wonderful speakers. So that's the thing, really. So this is really catered to casual folks who really want to enjoy their audio in a way, but don't want to pay a lot of money or spend way too much time setting it up, kind of like how iPhones are for people who don't want to tinker with Android, you know what I mean? There's a reason why iPhones sell like hotcakes, in a way. So, as I said, these speakers are pretty cool, but the Era 300 is pretty interesting with Atmos built in. This is something worth looking at, in a way. Alright, so at the beginning of the episode, I kind of teased that there's a new Android phone that's come out, and it has one feature from the iPhone 14 Pro, and if you guessed it's a dynamic island, you're probably absolutely right. Realme have released a phone which basically has their own answer to Apple's Dynamic Island, which is pretty crazy, to say the least. The Realme C55 NFC, they have to mention that there's NFC. I mean, it makes sense because there are a lot of phones that don't come with NFC, so that's kind of a bummer, so that's why they have to make a point of mentioning it. So they released, they've launched this phone in Indonesia, but as I've seen a leak of the phone's like promotional materials like for the European market, but it's more or less the same product in a sense. So the Realme C55 is one of their more affordable phones that Realme offers. We've talked about the GT series and the regular number series before. I mean, on so many episodes, I've kind of lost count, let's just say that. But the C55 is like one of their more affordable phones. It comes with the MediaTek Helio G88 processor, 8 GB of RAM, 256 GB of storage, Realme 4.0 or Android 13, kind of out of the box. Micro SD card support, not surprising on a phone at this price point of under $250 and below. You gotta have micro SD card support, because a lot of people who are buying these kind of phones would be probably buying with one particular storage spec, mind you, and then they're probably gonna upgrade with a slightly bigger card in the future to get more storage out of the phone. So that's pretty interesting in a way. In terms of, you get a side mounted fingerprint scanner, 90 hertz display, a 64 megapixel main camera, in a way, and then you have a depth sensor, which is the second camera. So if you're thinking the second camera is something impressive, then it's just a normal depth sensor. Good thing they do include like a second, kind of alright camera. I mean, I've kind of seen the case with a lot of brands where they sort of offer a fake second or third camera. It's a real phenomena. I would suggest to you, if you have time, to check out Mr. Who's the Boss's video about phones where they basically kept a second or third camera, but it was fake, the third or the second camera. It was a real phenomena, but now obviously camera sensors are easy to come by, processors can support it. So we have slightly low res secondary sensors, and they're there to offer some useful features. I kind of believe that any phone, really, at any price point, the second camera should really be something useful, like the zoom or ultra-wide, because ultra-wide or zoom will come in handy for a lot of users, especially ultra-wide, to take you wider photos and things like that. Depth is really only useful for a very small number of use cases, and at this point, you might as well create AI mode to offer depth and macro functionality right away. Like, a lot of brands have done that, so that's something to keep take into consideration. In a way, you have 8 GB of RAM and 256 GB of storage, but then again, you might run out of storage fairly quickly. You know, who knows? So you can use a micro SD card in the phone. So that's pretty cool. As I said, you have 5,000 mAh battery, NFC support, and I mentioned the battery already. 33-watt fast charging. So this would easily make it the fastest charging phone out there in Realme's affordable lineup, and it's obviously coming hand in hand with the fact that Realme is kind of committed to offering 33 watts of faster fast charging, if that's really a sentence, in their phones. So that's pretty cool, but that's not really the real selling point, or the fact that it costs under $200 and it's a pretty good price. And there's also a 120 gigabyte variant, and it costs $150 or $160. And it's already kind of on sale in Indonesia. It's basically the fact that it comes with Realme's own take on Apple's dynamic island. The fact that they've managed to pull it off, even though they don't have any of the integration smarts of Apple. They've called it Mini Capsule, and it will sort of show you low battery alert, charging status, and data consumption of your phone, how much data have you consumed. And also, down the road, with a software update, it can even show you your step count and walking distance. That's pretty interesting. I think it's just like a software cosmetic feature, unlike Apple's actual feature, which, like, again, you probably is using a coprocessor to pull it off, and some lots of software integration. This is just a cosmetic feature. When the phone is on, you see the mini capsule up and running, so that's pretty interesting. But, other than that, it's a pretty interesting low-end phone, in a way, but I can't believe they managed to knock off the dynamic island. I think the question was more of if, not when, will it get copied. So, pretty surprising. But again, they're daring to leap a little forward, a little too forward, nonetheless. Right, jumping back to the world of Apple, we might be seeing some new Macs with the M3 chip. It's not been a while since we've had the M2 chip, but now we also have the Apple Silicon M3 chip coming, apparently, according to both Bloomberg and 95Mac. So Mark Gurman, obviously, is now at Bloomberg, reported that Apple is doing advanced validation testing of its upcoming iMac, and that it will be launched, obviously, right during WWDC, which around that time potentially, which and also will happen to feature the M3 chip in a way. And apparently the development's reached a late stage, so it's not expected to go into mass production for at least 3 months. So if you think about it, it won't ship till the second half of the year, at the earliest, according to Gurman. So that's pretty interesting. But on top of the iMac, apparently we might see a new 13 and 15 inch MacBook Air, including a first ever 15 inch MacBook Air and a Apple Silicon Mac Pro, as it's being told. And obviously, for those who've not been in the loop about new Macs coming, the Mac Pro might potentially have the M2 Ultra chip that we've kind of seen in the MacBook Pro. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And that's what Gurman has kind of been saying, that we could see new MacBook Airs with the M3 chip and potentially an iMac down the road with the Apple M3 chip in a way. And apparently, the M3 chip will be a 3 nanometer chip, being the first to do so, and that'll bring big performance and power efficiency, big performance improvements and power efficiency, relatively. So that's pretty interesting. And also, apparently, beyond the Mac, Apple's expected, according to Gurman, to bring the Apple M3 chip in the iPad Pro for the first half of 2024. So if you've kind of been looking to buy an iPad Pro and you're not really in a rush to get a new model, you might want to probably wait another year for the M3 Mac iPad Pro. Although I do know for a fact that resale values are good for iPad Pros, so I probably would stick to an M1 or M2 Mac iPad Pro. And then obviously if the M3 one comes out, trade the old model in for the new in a way. Interestingly, on top of Gurman's reporting, 95Mac claims that an M3 13-inch MacBook Air is in the works already, along with a 15-inch version with the same processor. So that's pretty interesting in a way. But also said, also on the flip side, Ming-Chi Kuo obviously stated that Apple could also be releasing the 15-inch MacBook Air with an M2 chip. But then again, now if they're moving over to the M3 chip, it makes sense, because if they released an M2 MacBook Air 15-inch, it wouldn't really sell like hotcakes like the M3 one. But then again, laptops obviously run on a totally different trajectory. But still, there's it's not that easy in a way. But yeah, it's pretty interesting that Apple is looking to release M3 MacBooks and an iMac in the next couple of months. So that's something to look forward to, something to be excited for in a way. And moving on, Samsung, apparently Samsung's been releasing the mid-range series, but expect to pay a fair bit more money. So the Galaxy A14, A34, and A54 will basically get a bit of a price bump in Europe, according to Snoopy Tech. He basically posted pricing for the base specs of all the phones. Starting out, the A14 will start at 220 euros. The 34, let's just say, will start at 420 euros, or 419 euros approximately. And then the A54 finally will cost 520 euros. Not surprising, given that there's obviously lots of economic pressures overall for Samsung, when you consider cost of some goods going up, fuel, transportation, logistics, and overall sort of inflation kind of biting in to overall operating costs. So Samsung has to pass on the higher cost to consumers. So that's going to kind of suck. They did it for the S23 series also early in the year. So expect the same for the A series in Europe, potentially. In the US, nothing's going to really change. So if you live stateside, nothing to worry about. It will probably cost more or less the same like last year. But as I said, totally different market and different circumstances. So that's pretty interesting in a way. Moving on, the brand has announced that they'll be showing off the Nothing Air 2. They're going to be launching the earbuds on March 22nd at 3 p.m. GMT. So do check the website and socials and their Twitter page for more information. Pretty interesting in a way. What could we be getting in the Nothing Air 2 other than being some nicer earbuds? Features like personalized air, active noise cancellation and transparency mode, and multi-point and connectivity for multiple devices simultaneously. So that's pretty interesting in a way. Now, I was looking up across the internet for more kind of news to share or devices, but we've kind of gotten our first look at the Xiaomi Smart Band 8, and that's because the watch has kind of been certified by the Korean regulators for telecom gear. Xiaomi obviously filed it for certification, and so there are pictures of the device. So you have this iconic, you have this similarly typical sort of design, sort of like previous smart bands, like other Mi bands in the past. But now you have interchangeable bands on the top and bottom from the looks of it. So that kind of means this one will feature detachable straps like the Apple Watch, so you can slide it out and put something in additionally or replace it. So that's pretty cool in a way, and a slightly larger device pretty much. And we don't know what kind of health tracking it will come with, but it'll be pretty interesting. Apparently, according to the listing, it will feature a 3.87 watt volt lithium ion battery. It's obviously a small battery already, and Bluetooth 5.1, and obviously it will come with a colorful display like previous Xiaomi smart bands. So that's pretty interesting leak, given that with this device has now been certified by Korean regulators. So that's pretty interesting in a way. Nothing to be excited about, but again, something quite interesting. And interesting enough, speaking of which, Google is going to be doing Google I/O on May the 10th. Just one day, May the 10th, this year, with a limited live audience, so not a lot of people. But again, a developer keynote followed by on-demand technical sessions featuring obviously in-depth looks at Android and Google products and software. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And obviously, if you want to watch it online, you can register it for free, so you can get access to all the resources in a way. So you can obviously look it up at Google I/O. So that's kind of exciting nonetheless. I mean, I do hope to see some more news about Bard and the AI efforts, because this really is the hot button trend in tech right now. Let's just say that. All right, we got more bits and bobs to talk about. Speaking of which, YouTube is going to be apparently ditching banner ads that show up, pop up at the bottom. If you have the desktop version of YouTube, you have you usually get bottom. You get ads at the bottom, essentially, overlay ads on top of the video at the bottom of the video, pretty much. Apparently, going to be going away in April, according to a post in YouTube's help page. That apparently the overall ad format, it's not a good fit for the user, quote unquote, and was hindering the viewing experience. And furthermore, it also stated that it wanted to shift engagement to higher performing ad formats. So it's not surprising, and that well, but as I said, it'll go away after April the 6th. So I mean, it's been nice and seeing you. It's been nice knowing overlay ads. You might see one in this video that you might be watching if you're watching this on YouTube. But yeah, they're kind of. But you can obviously close them off. So that's that. I'm sure. I think pre-roll and mid-roll ads are quite effective for them now. So they don't really need the overlay ads, and the banner ads kind of do their job on the side, if you know what I mean. So that's pretty interesting. Yeah, apparently, switching gears pretty much, Lamborghini is going to be offering their SUV, their Urus SUV, and it'll go all electric in 2029. Now that's far out, pretty much. That's even like far ahead of even Porsche's plan of offering their mid-engine or 911 car as an all-electric vehicle. Apparently, according to Lamborghini's CEO, if I can get Stefan Winkelmann, he obviously quoted him quoted saying, while speaking to journalists last week, in 28 and 29 we'll have our first two BEVs or battery electric vehicles. We'll have a fourth model, so today we have three models. It'll be the first one to be a to be completely a BEV car in 2028, and then 2029 there'll be a new Urus. Now, he didn't exactly say Urus EV, but we can assume straight away that the Urus will be electric starting in 2029, the model year. But for now, apparently 2022 was the last year that we've seen a complete petrol version of the Lambo, and from here on out we're seeing nothing but hybrid and plug-in hybrid EV Lamborghinis, and they're pushing more towards hybrids. But apparently their first EV will be a 2+2 two-door car, so I'm assuming this is going to be a coupe sedan with more this is going to be a coupe sedan. I have a feeling given the description here, and it will hit the market in 2028, and the following year you're going to see an electric Urus. That's a very long again, I'm sure that they're working on this technology, they're working behind the scenes. We can't sit there and be mad at them that it's going to take them forever, because a lot of manufacturers ain't Tesla and Rivian, that they have R&D facilities and developers running out and creating an EV. They're just starting to get around creating EVs, so it's going to take a while for them. But if you really look at the luxury car market, they got to move very quickly. Like, at least if you look at the bottom of the, if you look at different other price points, like middle of the price point or lower priced tiers, if it is taking a very long time for models in that price segments to come, that's just because the technology is expensive, the batteries are expensive. But luxury vehicles, if we talk about supercars or sports cars, you must have heard of the Rimac sports car. So I have a fear for Lamborghini. They got to move very quickly if they want to go electric. Obviously, they're looking to obviously start offering hybrids, which is nice. But if you really look at the competition, Porsche, McLaren, Rimac with the full battery vehicles, you have competition. It's an aggressive market. And consumers, obviously, especially those who buy luxury vehicles, they're not going to look at a Lamborghini and they're going to still buy it for the V. There will be a small portion of people buy the V8 and the V6 cars and the hybrids and all, if that is. But yeah, it's apparently going to take a while for the Italian sports car maker to go full throttle electric. So that's pretty bizarre, but again, pretty interesting in a way. And a few days back, I was just kind of reading on my computer, and I always stumble upon an article in The Verge by David Pierce about a bit more of a rant and a hot take of why streaming boxes or streamers suck. And the article is called "All the Streaming Boxes Suck Now." There are no good streaming boxes, and I blame everybody. And I think Pierce is up to something in this one. But it's a bit of a rant or a hot take on basically the poor state of affairs with streaming boxes, and I'll link the article in the show notes so you can check it out when you have the time. But I'll read a bit part of the article here, if I could find one. This wasn't always the case, by the way. Way back when, TiVo boxes were expensive but popular because they did exactly the thing you wanted to do, help you watch what you want, when you want, better than anything else on the market. The skip button alone was worth the lifetime subscription. They was talking about the DVR that was if I remember, my baby memory would say it was $500 for the thing. Now you look at the... the Sling Box was a similarly priced, similarly premium gadget. It served a specific purpose and it did it well. Companies like Cavo have periodically come along trying to truly upgrade the experience. Even Microsoft made a big bet on reinventing entertainment with the Xbox One, but it didn't go so well. Over time, the industry seemed to learn that you can't do this well and it's not really worth trying. And that kind of explains the current state of affairs with how streaming boxes are, and the fact that we don't get high performance boxes with a broad range of features, and really that Nvidia and Apple are the holdouts, really. The Nvidia Shield and the Apple TV really are the premium boxes, and if you look at the rest of the markets, they're all sort of trying to sort of be like the cheapest option and next best option for you just want to watch Netflix and Disney Plus, you buy a streaming stick. That was just the gist of the article, and kind of going on and on about why they really suck. But to be fair, you gotta give the benefit of doubt to the streaming to those producing streaming players. First of all, this kind of hardware, it's difficult to monetize or make it profitable. First of all, you have to look at the fact that streaming boxes, this is my own take, honestly, this is how I look at it. If you look at the streaming box business, it's not the same as smartphones or games consoles or laptops, where there's like a sentimental value and like consumers like know that there's something special in them, and they're really willing to pay the kind of the high sticker prices for those products. Whereas streaming boxes, what do they really do exactly? They let you watch video, they let you stream video from online services. And it's a common bargain, it's a common commodity item, like wireless earbuds. Like, it's got to be cheap, everyone's got to get one, and that's it. It just, it's got to work for what it is, and if it breaks, kind of, you just get go and get another one. So that's the thing you have also. But also, it's just like the business model for these products. As I said, these ain't smartphones. People don't really value their Apple TVs or Nvidia Shields. There's a small proportion of people, I might be wrong, that probably value their Apple TV or Nvidia Shield like full-blown living room machines that are worth their weight in gold. Let's just say that the Apple TV is really good. I've kind of tinkered around, I tried it out sort of at a store. They're really fast. They're much faster than any smart TV that you can ever use. They load up apps at record-breaking speed. They let you play games. It's useful, but as I said, there's like a very small market of consumers where they really see the value in this product. Obviously, I like watching TV. I like, you know, browsing and watching stuff on TV. And you know, if I get a big screen TV and obviously good setup, I could just sit in front of it and watch stuff all day long, or you know, play games or something. I kind of value it a bit. Not everyone is the same. It ain't one size fits all. But hey, it would be lovely to have more and more features in our streaming boxes, given that they're sort of standalone hardware when you just connect it to your TV and that's it. So you just need to switch out the box for new features, right? But as I said, it's a totally different consumer behavior when compared to smartphones. The smartphones and laptops, you have to upgrade to get new features because it will improve your productivity, improve your creativity, let's just say that, and so people upgrade. Whereas streaming boxes, they just don't hold up, if you know what I mean, in a way. But yeah, it'd be lovely if your streaming box could basically do video calls, you know, be a smart home hub. But as I said, we already have options like that on the market. But as I said, there are some flaws with the Shield, Nvidia Shield, and the Apple TV. The Shield kind of lacks in the fact that it's not really up to date. It is quite an old streaming box, but it's still well updated. But that's the thing you have. And the Apple TV kind of, though, the software is the real bugger, but that can be set for Apple hardware generally. The software can be the obstacle, but really, if you get past it, it's a very good device generally, in a way. And yeah, I mean, it's an interesting hot take, but I would say the Apple TV is really like the next best thing to the ultimate streaming box, let's just say that. But yeah, what do you guys think? I'd love to know your thoughts on the streaming box. I think also it's the fact that The Verge obviously is an American publication, and obviously they obviously cover devices you can buy at a Target or Walmart. And I think the writer didn't even go into depth with Android based streaming boxes coming in from China that people buy obviously for illegal IPTV. Those bad boys come with incredible performance, potentially better loading times, and all kinds of upgrades and features, extra USB ports, more capability and functions. But just, that's the thing, it's stuck at AliExpress. Not everyone's going to go to AliExpress to buy a fast streaming box. If it's available at a Target or a Best Buy or a Walmart or Amazon, they're going to buy it from there. But yeah, there are faster gear out there. We don't have exposure to that, you know what I mean? But also, that's the thing. There are streaming boxes like the Mecool and the Formula, for example, that I've read online. Apparently, they're quite fast and they're quite a beast, let's just say that, as a streaming box with very fast load times. It can even be a media server for some people when set up correctly. So I've kind of gone on and on, but yeah, I mean, he has a point in a way. And I honestly think, you know, streaming boxes could do more. But at this point, they could do with a pro model in a way. Now, one could say, one could come to the defense and say, oh, wait, Mawin, there's Amazon offers the Fire TV Cube, but let's just face it, Amazon sells their Fire TV products as a kind of like, not gateway drug, but sort of to sell, to sort of push more sales to Amazon.com and to all their other online services like Prime Video and Kindle and things like that, and Amazon Music and so on and so forth. Heck, you might be listening to this on Amazon Music, so that's pretty interesting. So it's kind of like a means to an end. So they don't really make, cutting-edge devices for the fun of it. It's kind of like there's a bigger purpose behind them. So that's very interesting. What do you think? Let me know. You can contact me. It's all in the show notes. So yeah. Alrighty, so this leads us to the end of today's episode. What do you think of everything I've heard today so far? All the new devices, the Apple M3 chip, the whole rant about streaming boxes and how bad they are. Let me know. You can obviously reach out to me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Sayid_Mawin99. Follow me there if you can, and obviously you can send a DM right over there. You can also email. The address is in the show notes down below if you want to be formal about it. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss another episode. Leave a review on Apple and just rate it on and rate the show on Spotify so that obviously more people can find it and we are quite visible. Let's just say that. And share this show or episode to your friends and family. And yeah, till next week, this is your boy Mawin signing out. Wherever you are, whatever you're up to, I hope you have a wonderful day ahead and also a wonderful weekend. All right? Thank you for listening. And yeah, take care. Ciao.